Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Monday, August 24th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr., and joining me is Tim Ma-fucking Geddes.
Let's him host. Kev, I do have a question. Why am I so big?
You know, I was just noticing that. It's because I set you up the other way with you hosting, and then gotcha. I asked Blessing like 2 minutes ago, I was like, hey, who's hosting? And
he's so zoomed in.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Well, I mean, to be fair, his camera's very zoomed in to begin with.
I mean,
Tim looked like he was about to deliver some news, like a banger.
See, we're getting a lot better here. But Bless, speaking of better, oh my God, you're looking better than you have since the first day I met you, baby. I'm loving this haircut. Wow,
thanks, man. Yeah, dude, I finally got to get like the actual like good hair. I mean, and this isn't me throwing shade at yourself because he did a great job when he last cut my hair. But I haven't gotten a proper haircut since like
a professional.
Yeah, since like February, and so it's been a while, and I've finally been able to reunite with my barber after a lot of organization and figuring out how to do things socially distanced, and we made it work. Thank God.
I love it, man.
Tim, how are you feeling 2 days after DC fandom?
I'm feeling pretty good, man. You know, it's been weird getting used to being outside of the dome for a long time. I thought I was just going to live there forever. But yeah, no, I'm happy that the DC fandom happened. I think it was a really cool event. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. But to me, its imperfections kind of gave it the charm that I'm looking for. For a 12-hour stream, there was enough hype announcements to keep things going, whether you're a movie fan or a game fan. And there was enough awkward, weird moments and like decisions, like the dome itself, that it kind of just kept the energy going no matter what we were watching.
Yeah, I didn't get to catch most of it because I was out and about on Saturday. But for the moments I tuned in for, it seemed like a fascinating thing because I caught Will Arnett like doing the whole bit where he's like, oh, I'm trapped in the dome or whatever. And I caught all the bits where people are standing in front of very obviously bad green screen. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you. That lends to a kind of a charm that I kind of appreciate because you could tell that they're trying, but you could tell that they're also struggling at the same time.
Yeah, man. It was interesting to say the least. But I was down. I was down for it. And it's unfortunate that we're not going to get a Marvel equivalent. Like, I mean, I guess we kind of got that last year with Comic-Con with the Marvel panel they did. But I think at the end of the day that, you know, there's a lot of downsides to this, everything having to be digital right now. But I do think an upside is that we all get to see it. It's not just Hall H. It's not just the people in a room. Because as cool as the Marvel panel was last year, I didn't get to see it. They eventually uploaded it online and they cut out all the trailers. They cut out all the actual fun animations. And some of those leaked later with, crowd footage or whatever. But like, it was nothing like this. Like this is cool. And I hope that this is more indicative of the future than anything else.
Well, Tim, I'm excited to keep talking about DC fandom because today's stories include the reveal of Gotham Knights and Suicide Squad. When can we expect a new Switch model and more? Because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, Gamescom opening night live is happening this Thursday. I can't believe already here. It feels like it came quick, and I'm very excited about it. You can catch us reacting to it live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames right after Thursday's Kind of Funny Games Daily. It'll be your regular React crew. That'll be me, Tim, Andy, and Greg's returning because Greg's on vacation right now. You're not going to get any Greg this week aside from opening night live. That's right. He's coming.
Boo,
he's coming back from the dead.
We want more Greg. To react.
I'm sorry, Kevin. I'm sorry. Even great leaders have to take breaks.
An update there is we are actually getting a fair amount of Greg because we're getting him for opening night live. We're also getting him
too much Greg, slightly less
Gamescast this week, which is going to be the post show analysis of the not fandom. I'm stuck in the dome, guys. I'm sorry. It's hard to get out. Of opening night live, which I'm so excited about. Did you see that Jeff Keighley was kind of given some more information about opening night live?
I've seen he's been teasing a few things. Like he teased that Call of Duty is going to be there. he teased a couple of other games, I think. And then, yeah, I saw he was kind of talking about how, yeah, you're going to expect a lot of updates on games that have already been announced.
Yeah, let me pull it up in a sec. Sorry, keep going.
As you're doing that, thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed, Mohammed and Blackjack. Today, we're brought to you by Klarna and Bespoke Post, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today. Starting with Tim, what you got for me?
What I got for you here is a few things on opening night live for Thursday from Jeff Keighley. The show is live from a studio in Los Angeles. We're being very careful. No live audience. Currently 38 games in the show from 18 different publishers. Expected to run 2 hours. There will be some new game announcements. But like opening night live last year, the show is primarily focused on updates from announced titles. So no, we are not announcing 38 new games. So far, we have announced the reveal of the Doom Eternal campaign and the reveal of season 2 of Fall Guys.
Yeah.
Let's fucking go. I'm excited to see what that looks like. There'll be much more to share in the coming days on other titles. Also, the show is open for co-streaming on Twitch and YouTube. So please watch and share. And we will, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. Be there. Yeah, I'm very excited. Like, the idea that it's going to be probably mostly updates to games that already exist, like, that's kind of what we've been talking about as we've been bringing up Opening Night Live and what our expectations can be. Because based off of last year, there weren't any announcements last year that were shut the world down, like they totally blew us away type of announcements. But there were like cool things here and there from Opening Night Live. And so if they're able to continue to ride that wave and have, I mean, and even the things that they already said are going to be there, right? Fall Guys Season 2, Call of Duty, Doom Eternal DLC, like that right there is already pretty, like those are that's a banger lineup right there.
Totally,
so if they
can
continue with that, I'm down for it.
And more than that, I think it's interesting to look at this Opening Night Live compared to last year's, where last year's was the first. And I think that while there wasn't any bangers like you're talking about, I do think that overall it was a really well put together show.
It was a good show.
That, like, kind of last year just didn't really have a place because it was so close to Game Awards. But I feel like this year, it kind of being marketed more as the end of this Summer Game Fest, like being the season finale, there's a bit more expectation there for me, where I'm kind of hoping that we see something of some type of substantial meaning to the industry here, where it's like, when you look at what Jeff has been responsible for himself on with the Games Fest side, we got Tony Hawk, we got Crash Bandicoot. Obviously, those things speak to me a lot, but I think that him hyping up Opening Night Live as the season finale, I want one. There needs to be one thing that makes us go, "Oh shit!"
Now, what
this
do you,
was
what,
all worth it.
What do you think of the tagline for Opening Night Live? Because the tagline is "This is only the beginning," which tells me, and this is me making a leap. This is me making a stretch, but it's about to be the beginning of next gen, right? Like, if I could see this, and this is kind of what I was theorizing on, I guess, tomorrow's PS I Love You XOXO, because we recorded that early, and so now it feels like something that's already gone up, even though it's not gone up yet. I was kind of talking about how, like, yeah, I can expect to see updates on next-gen titles that we've already seen, right? Updates from that PlayStation event that we got in June, or that Xbox event we got in May, and I guess July at this point, right? Like, I'm expecting somewhat of this Opening Night Live to kind of set up what we can expect from, let's say, the first year of next gen.
Yeah. No, it's funny you say that, because I thought you were going to say that this is the beginning of next year's Summer Game Fest.
Oh, my God.
Like, not only is it the end of this year's, it's the beginning of next year's.
Beginning of winter.
I don't know. And I think that something that's actually extremely interesting to think about is, where does Game Awards fall? We're getting into this conversation of, like, there's so many ifs and buts and stuff. Xbox committing still to November, but, like, is PlayStation going to hit this year? Like, they're, so far it's just holiday, you know, and I don't expect it to get delayed, but at what point does it? You know, at what point does it go to 2021?
Dude, we'll see. Anything's possible.
And then with Game Awards, at what point does that just get moved into the beginning of next year? We'll have to see, guys. We'll have to see. But anyway, we'll talk way more about that over the next couple days, I'm sure.
Let's get into our actual story number one. We have a DC fandom wrap-up for you here. I've divided this into two different stories. So we have 1A, 1B. 1A, we're going to talk about Gotham Knights. 1B, we'll get to Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. But to start with 1A, let's talk about Gotham Knights, which was revealed on Saturday at DC Fandom. This is Steve Watts at GameSpot. WB Games Montreal has finally revealed its long-rumored Batman project at DC Fandom after months of teasers and rumors. As rumors suggested, the game is called Gotham Knights and features multiple playable characters from within the Bat family. It's coming to PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X in 2021. Unlike the Arkham games, you won't be playing as Bruce Wayne. In fact, the billionaire Caped Crusader is dead. The reveal trailer showed Gotham City grappling with the death of Bruce Wayne. Before he went, though, he recorded a message calling the four protagonists into action: Nightwing, Robin, Batgirl, and Red Hood. The trailer showed off each of them in action, including the heroes fighting together. A separate press release confirmed it can be played solo or with two-player co-op. The cinematic ended with confirmation that the story will include the Court of Owls. The developer chat and extended gameplay demo that followed seemed to suggest some degree of a live aspect to the game, with the ability to customize your heroes and enemies shown with HP, XP, and level indicators. The press release also outlined how we can expect the four different characters to play differently. Batgirl is a hacker who uses her tonfa and martial arts. Nightwing is a more acrobatic fighter who uses Escrima sticks. Red Hood is a vigilante who uses a combination of traditional and high-tech weapons, including firearms. Finally, Robin is a prodigy with a background in psychological warfare. He uses a quarterstaff and stealth techniques.
Let me stop you right there. This just reminds me of, remember all the rumors that Rocksteady was going to make a Ninja Turtles game? Man,
I mean, I saw a question that came in. I didn't pick up the question, but there was a question that was essentially asking, like, who can we expect as DLC from this game, and can we expect the Ninja Turtles? And I sat and I thought about it, and I was like, man, that'd be wild, but, like, imagine that world, right?
Why
imagine
not,
that
man.
Universe.
They've played together a couple times now, both in comic form, movie form, even Injustice form.
Oh, yeah.
The video game.
We'll see. You might remember that Batgirl, real name Barbara Gordon, was paralyzed by Joker in the Arkham games. Because this is not set in the same continuity, she is able to put on the mask again. Tim, 2 days separated from DC Fandom, what are your thoughts on Gotham Knights?
I mean, again, I still don't feel like I'm totally out of the dome, but I am extremely impressed with the presentation of this game and what it ended up being. Like, I feel like for how long this game had been ridiculously teased, I think what we ended up getting from it is something that is a very interesting mix of what we expected with stuff that I don't think anybody was really kind of putting their money on. And I think that that's actually for the better. Like, this looks like something that's very, very interesting and different than what we kind of would have expected from, you know, what WB Montreal was going to do. I don't know that all of those things are going to work, but I do think that they presented this in a way that there was nothing that made anyone I've seen go, oh no, they're fucking this up. You know, at the very least, it was like, interesting about the, you know, all the numbers and the leveling and all that stuff. We'll see how that goes. But it wasn't a fuck it, I have to write this off because they took this thing that I'm excited for and now I'm not excited for it. Like, everyone that was excited for whatever they were working on, it seems like kind of is still excited, if not more excited than they were before the dome.
Yes, I'm with you. Everything about this really spoke to me and really got me excited. And I've seen some nitpicks here and there as far as, like, oh, is this games as a service? Oh, they're not continuing Batman. I really wanted another Arkham game. Or, oh, like, yeah, with the numbers popping out of characters and stuff, what does that mean for the combat? And I can understand some of those nitpicks here and there, but overall, every single thing they showed for me really speaks to me in terms of this feels like a very fresh Batman experience.
Wait, and so quick question. So this is not in the Arkham universe that we know.
No.
This is almost like a multiverse situation, as I understand it. Uh-huh. Right? Like, it is not a continuation of Arkham Knight.
Yeah, because I don't even remember how Arkham Knight ends, but I thought Batman died.
Yeah, I didn't even finish Arkham Knight, so I don't know.
I didn't either. Yeah. I got stuck with that tank level. Fuck it, level. You know what I mean?
But that's actually the point I'm getting to, though, is that, like, for me, I played Arkham Asylum, loved it, thought that game was fantastic. Played Arkham City, really enjoyed it. Got to Arkham Knight, and I was just like, all right, man, This is a lot more of the same. The Arkham games are great, right? Arkham game, like Rocksteady knows what they're doing. They know how to make a good game. But at a certain point, like after we get what, 4 Batman Arkham games, it does start to feel a bit samey and a bit stale. And so seeing everything they've shown in this trailer, seeing the new characters, seeing the RPG systems that they're adding to it, seeing that they're adding co-op to it, legit everything they showed here spoke to me in a way that I am very excited for this game.
Yeah, it's interesting because to me, somebody that has not beat the Arkham games, I've tried Asylum a couple times, and it's just one of those games that like I've loved every moment I've played of it, but I just never stuck with it. And I've restarted it like 8 times. But watching this, it's kind of like I don't care too much about the Bat family, like about the characters that we saw. Batgirl's cool, but even then, like I like a very specific iteration of Batgirl, and it doesn't seem like this one's it. The costume looks dope, but that doesn't sell me instantly. And on top of that, like I'm not ever a fan of, hey, there's this big giant blue thing exploding in the city and particle effects are everywhere and like everything's just getting torn up and the destruction is like mass scale. And this gameplay bit we saw really focused on that stuff. But I will say that this got me excited to go back and try to commit to actually playing through the Arkham games, which I think by the time I did that, if I finished them, that I would be extremely excited about this game, because it would be that, oh, this is just different enough. And now I do want the Bat family, because I want something that is a change up. Do you think that after the 4 Rocksteady Batman games, changing the characters is going to be enough of a change up?
Oh, 100%. I think between changing the characters, I think also the new revamped combat and RPG systems and stuff, like I think all that stuff in combination is going to be enough. Because again, like watching this trailer, watching the gameplay dev breakdown that they did, like everything here seems fresh and new. And for some of the complaints I saw that people had with it, right, mainly being that, oh yeah, this doesn't look like the same Arkham game. I'm like, good. Yeah, I don't necessarily want the same Arkham game, because if I wanted to go play Arkham, I can go play Arkham. This being a WB Montreal game that, for all intents and purposes, when they came out and they put out Arkham Origins, it seemed like a lot of people were let down by it for one reason or another, right? And I think the main thing behind that is the fact that they're not Rocksteady. And so for them to take on this game series that is not theirs, right, is, you know, them trying to either fill in a gap or you know, make whatever kind of spin-off kind of game or prequel or whatever, like to fit in with that series, that I feel like that kind of got in the way of, one, the reception of it, and two, like how much they're able to take ownership of it. This seems like something they can take ownership of as WB Montreal, because it is, they don't have to, one, it's in a separate timeline or universe or however you want to call it, right? And so they're able to make their own story. They're able to make something that is different enough so that everybody isn't comparing it to Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Arkham Knight. And then also like do new things, like do new fresh things, inject these RPG systems in there. While also on the other side, Rocksteady is doing their own thing, which isn't Batman, right? It is Suicide Squad fighting the Justice League, doing their own thing. And so I think, you know, from all sides here, This is a pretty good scenario for both Rocksteady and WB Montreal to have their own visions.
This seems like a win, unanimously. Yeah. I think that the Gotham Knights is a win.
The Nanobiologist writes in to patreon.com, says, kind of funny game, just like you, Cannon, says, hi, Blessing Tim. We got some cool trailers over the weekend, and now know what the Bat property has been up to. But did the Gotham Knights trailer help or hurt your feelings about this one being the actual games as a service game that we all fear WB to be making? Well, looking back, I got major Wolfenstein Youngblood vibes, which, while not a games as a service, still introduced a lot of weird elements that hampered the reception of that game. For instance, damage numbers, levels, locked off areas, dungeons, and forced co-op. What elements from these quasi games as a service games do you hope that Gotham Knights introduces to really make the series better? What part do you think will hurt the game, but may still be introduced? Thanks, the Nanobiologist. So, for me, as somebody who played Wolfenstein Youngblood, I'm with you here, Nanobiologist, as far as the things that game introduced to modern Wolfenstein that felt more games as a service-y. The thing I will say, especially compared to what we saw from Gotham Knights, is Wolfenstein Youngblood added those elements, and the way that they added them in were bad. Like, I don't think it was that it was that inherently the idea of a Wolfenstein games as a service game is a bad idea. Like, I think they could pull that off if they really put in the effort and really put in the work. But Wolfenstein Youngblood just had elements in there that just did not work overall to the experience. Like, they had the leveling for the enemies. They had, like, optional areas they can find in the map and all this stuff. But as a game that was two-player co-op and inherently still a Wolfenstein game and didn't necessarily encourage backtracking and all this stuff, that it felt more like that stuff was shoehorned in rather than the game was designed around it. And so if Gotham Knights has some of this, and to be clear, right, Gotham Knights, I don't think it's a games as a service game. I think it's just a game that happens to have co-op in it. And so for this game to be a co-op game, right, like, I think if it's designed around the RPG systems in a way that makes sense and that works, I don't think that stuff gets in the way. I think that then enhances the experience.
Yeah, I think it just goes back to, you know, video games still being such a new medium that when things are introduced, it takes a little bit of time for them to be implemented into other games. And it's not always going to work. And I think that sometimes games are almost put out as a sidestep of like, oh, we're going to test some shit and see what works before we move on to the next one. I think that with Youngblood, that's a perfect example of that, where they tried some different things. We'll see what ends up the next Wolfenstein game ends up looking like, right? How many of those elements do they actually enhance and take forward? How many they're like, all right, you know what? That didn't work at all. When you look at RPGs, it's silly to call a game, unless a game is a traditional RPG. To call a game an RPG now is kind of weird because every game has RPG elements. Every game has a skill tree, you know? And it's like, when we see skill trees in games, we don't necessarily stop and say, oh, it's an RPG, and like hold it to all these standards. We look at it as like, oh, it has a skill tree. Or at the very least, just say it has RPG elements. I think that games as a service is still in that taboo state where it's a bad word, a bad series of words. But I do think that at some point we're just going to be like, oh, it has games as a service elements. Or we'll come up with a much better way to say that doesn't sound as clunky. But I think we're already in that point where the elements are kind of transcending into and making their way into more traditional games. And I don't think that that's fully a bad thing, but I do think that we haven't seen it work out great yet.
Yes. And I think there's still more left to be learned about Gotham Knights. The GameSpot article here mentions that there's some degree of a live aspect to the game, but going through the press release, rewatching the dev trailers, right, and like going through all the information, I'm still not clear on what those live elements are. Like, I didn't really get that from any of the stuff that was shown. Like, it very much, when I think of live elements, I am thinking of, all right, post launch, you know, you'll get this, and this, or like some kind of roadmap alongside the game, or some kind of like dailies or weekly objectives. Like, that's what comes to mind for me when I think of live service aspects. And I don't think we got any of that from what was shown. Like, it very much does just seem like an action RPG or an action game with I guess heavy RPG elements that is going to happen to be co-op. And maybe like the thing is, you know, with your co-op partner, maybe they're able to carry in their Robin into your game and you guys are able to play that way, which I guess does introduce some sort of like, all right, now we got to figure out level scaling and all that stuff. Maybe that is what can be translated as, oh yeah, this is a live game or a live service game. But for the most part, I am not getting that vibe from this game as far as it being some sort of games or service game. And so kindoffunny.com/you're wrong if you have any more info as far as what points to this game being a games as a service, but I don't necessarily see that or have that fear with this game. Let's talk about Suicide Kill the Justice League. This is story 1B. And again, this is Steve Watts at GameSpot. After a long wait, Rocksteady has finally revealed its next game with an in-depth look at DC fandom titled Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. The studio had announced the Suicide Squad game with the promise of more details to come and a teaser image of a target over Superman's head. The teaser trailer expanded on that concept and announced a release date of 2022 on PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X. Just like with the Gotham Knights game unveiled earlier in the day, you'll be able to play this one with your friends. The debut trailer shown during DC fandom featured several members of the squad goofing off and then reluctantly springing into action against enemy forces. It ended with Superman showing up and apparently killing a civilian as the Suicide Squad realized they would have to take down the hero. A follow-up with host Will Arnett suggested that the four main characters will be Harley Quinn, Deadshot, King Shark, and Captain Boomerang. And I'll add that in the press release released later, they did confirm those are the four characters. Where is Weasel?
We're fucking robbed of Weasel already, man. This game's going to fail.
Terrible. Tasked with defeating the Justice League. It's a 1-4 player co-op with all four characters represented, though you can play single player and have your companions play by AI and switch between them. Arnett also conducted a brief interview with Rocksteady's Stephen Hill, who said that this game is part of the Arkham universe. And then I went and read the press release. I'm going to pull this portion of the press release in because this is something I've not seen anybody talk about, and I want to talk about it. Part of the press release reads, Warner Brothers Games and DC today announced Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, a new genre-bending action-adventure shooter that can be played solo or with up to four players in online co-op. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League combines the studio's signature character-driven story gameplay with third-person shooter action to deliver a gaming experience unlike any other. Tim, this game's a third-person shooter. I've not seen anybody mention this anywhere.
I mean, the genre-bending thing, I think.
That's interesting, right?
I mean...
Or am I making like a mountain out of a molehill?
I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill because third-person shooter action. Like, I think they're just trying to say that, like, some characters are going to be playing a little bit more like a Nathan Drake, and some players are going to play a little bit more like a Kratos. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's where the genre bending comes in here. But, yeah, it's this game is very interesting to me because, obviously, Rocksteady, this being their first game in forever. I was saying this when we were in the Dome, but, like, when you look at kind of the big top tier devs that aren't first party devs, or even if they are in some way like affiliated with Retro Studios and Rocksteady are the two that I'm just like, my God, how did such top tier devs not put out a game in the last 5 years?
To be 7 years by the 7 years time this comes out. Yeah,
right. Oh yeah, by the time this comes out, I mean, look at Retro, and it's going to be even longer. Yeah, like, since 2013. So that's crazy to me. And then for it to be this, and then we still have so long to wait until this game actually is a real game that we're seeing gameplay of and we have a better understanding. I thought this was a really cool reveal. And I thought that they gave just enough for us to have conversations about and theorize and try to come up with what this game might be over the next couple of years. And like, it gives them room to have some pretty cool reveals throughout the next 2 years before this game comes out. But it also gives Gotham Knights some room to not only be its own game, but give it a chance at success, but also to be its own thing that's separate from the Rocksteady universe and the Arkham universe that we know that this game is in. So we'll see. And like, the weird thing is, like, again, the games as a service stuff, like, 2022 is a long ways away. It still is not far enough away that it won't have, you know, still have the development mindset of current gen of like still not figuring out all this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I think that even by then that we still might see some like issues with all this stuff, like with the games as a service stuff not being fully fleshed out in the way like we look at Avengers now and we're just like, oh, man, like it has all these issues that like, if that game was made today, I feel like a lot of that stuff wouldn't be in it, you know. But maybe it's far enough out. I don't know.
I mean, I think the growing pains that we've seen so many different games and service games go through over the last generation, those growing pains are probably going to help out with this game, especially with Avengers coming out, which seems to be somewhat similar, even though in the press release and from what we know about this game, right? Like, they don't really describe it as a games and service. They say it can be played with up to four player co-op. And from what we've seen in the trailer, right? Like, we can see how this game more so than I think Gotham Knights can go in the direction of, oh yeah, I can see how this is going to expand into a games as a service game. With
the other way.
Wait, say that again?
I think the opposite.
Really?
I think that from what we've seen, it's much easier to extrapolate Gotham Knights as being games as a service. I don't think that it is.
Really?
I don't think that it is. But we saw numbers. We saw levels. We saw two people going up against a giant guy situation, Supreme, right?
Yeah.
Like, I see more of that there. With what we got here, yeah. I don't think there's enough evidence to show that this is going to be that, with the exception of relating it to things we already know, like Avengers.
Yeah, and well, I'm also like combining this with what we've heard reports and rumors being about this game. And so like with all things considered, and me pretty basically like almost assuming that this game is going to be a game as a service at this point, right? You imagine that they're seeing what Avengers is doing. They're going to look at the release of Avengers and how that looks post-launch and all that stuff, right? And they're going to take in what we've seen from Destiny and from what we've seen with Division 1 and Anthem and Fallout 76 and pretty much every other game that we've seen released this generation. Take that and put it into learnings and figure out, all right, how do we release this game where at launch people don't have an issue with it, and at post-launch we're able to develop it if that is what they're playing with the game is. I'm curious to see. So far, I think they're leading off with the right foot. Like, I'm feeling very good about this game showing with just the cinematic trailer, right? And I understand people who are like, I want to see gameplay. Like, gameplay is king. I'm not going to form an opinion until I see gameplay. And I think all that is fair, invalid. Of course, this game is 2 years away, and so I'm still at the place where I'm like, all right, cool. Show me gameplay next year. I don't mind. With what we see from the cinematic, I like the tone. I like what they're going for.
I think with that, it's like, of course, for a video game, we want to see gameplay. But I do think that when it comes to certain games, and I think that like IP-heavy games like a DC-focused endeavor, tone and vibe and character are just as important as seeing gameplay for the first time. And I think that what they did for Suicide Squad is give us exactly what I needed to see, which is something that is familiar but fresh. And this was a Suicide Squad that, you know, doesn't have all of the familiar trappings of the Hot Topic-esque vibes that the, you know, Jared Leto Joker-verse kind of reminds us of. But it still has the
it still has attitude.
And but it has a different look. It has a brightness to it of like just seeing Metropolis in the daytime. And like, granted, that could just be one level, but that's the level that they chose to show us in the beginning of this. Like, I think that that's going to go a long way of making us feel and be reminded of Sunset Overdrive, I think, is a very positive thing. So,
yeah, and
I think they nailed it.
You made the point earlier, right, of WB Montreal's Gotham Knights game and this game, and how, you know, having both of them on the release slate, how those games are going to interact with each other, right? I think one, them being in separate years is going to help both of them a lot. But then, yeah, Gotham Knight being that more leaning towards the traditional, hey, we're going out at nighttime, we're the Bat family, you know, we're doing Batman shit at night because that's how we roll, and it's dark and gritty on all this stuff. That in contrast with the Suicide Squad, which seems like it is going to have stuff going on in the daytime, it is going to have a fun energy to it, it is going to have an attitude to it, but at the same time, it has an energy that I think seemingly we might be able to vibe with, despite it being more of an upbeat game taking place in that universe. I think those are going to bounce off each other quite well, right? With them not both being the dark Batman game that we kind of expect. And totally. So I'm all about that. Mm-hmm. Alex writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. It's like you can. It says, hey, y'all, now that we've got our first tease of Kill the Justice League, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what the game will be. Personally, I love the tone of the game from the first teaser, as it seems super funny. And listening to the creator's description, I'm thinking the game is not a games as a service. Obviously, he said it's multiplayer, but I'm thinking it's still just a full-length co-op campaign, rather than the Avengers style of grinding and leveling. But that's just a guess. Thanks, Alex. Tim, I know we just got a cinematic trailer. We talked about it a little bit, but do you have any idea what this game, like, what the actual game of this game is going to be?
I mean, that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, where it's like, I think that had we not known about all the rumors of it being games as a service, I don't know that we would be as stuck on that concept.
Yeah, we wouldn't have jumped on the idea that, oh yeah, this is going to be that.
And again, it very much can be, like, easily. I think that right now it has equal chance of being a Avenger-style games as a service, or just being a full-length co-op campaign, or not, maybe not even co-op. Does anything about it say it's co-op?
Well, they do say in the press release, they said it's
one to four players. Say, yeah, you're right. Okay, well, I say it's most likely going to be a Avengers type game.
Yeah.
But even I think that there's a context there that it's like, that doesn't necessarily mean there's all the millions of war tables and stuff. It still could just be a Rocksteady style narrative.
Yes, like the wording in that press release is interesting, because if it is a games as a service game, I feel like coming out and saying one to four player, like one It can be played single player with up to 4-player co-op. That doesn't feel like the wording to me as if it was a games of service game. And so I'm kind of with you on the idea that right now I can go either way as far as what it is between just a co-op game or a games of service game, right? And like I think that a lot of this comes back to, hey, what is a games of service game, right? Like, is Borderlands games of service? Like, on one hand, yes, but on the other hand, it's not Destiny. It's not
That's the problem I have with this is the PR talk of it all is at the end of the day, these developers and publishers and the people doing the PR, they know that things are going to be received certain ways. And games as a service is seen as a cash grab, is seen as like a money hungry thing that is designed to not enhance the experience, but to make money. And sometimes the experience is enhanced by what they're doing, but oftentimes it works the other way of like, okay, how can we make more money off of this? How can we come up with something that gets us that money? And I think that them trying to like lead with this whole, it's a single player thing that you can also do up to 4-player co-ops. Like, we've heard that before with other games and we've seen what that ended up turning out to be, right? And I think that they understand that their wording is super important to like kind of not lie, but keep things in this like, well, it could be this, but it could be that, you know? And until we actually know, I think that it's all just kind of lip service to make us not hate this thing that doesn't exist yet. Which is smart, and that's they need to do that, of course. But we'll see. I'm very interested. I do think I think that we have no reason not to trust Rocksteady. So
yeah,
until we do, we should trust them.
Tim, are you ready to speculate some more?
Let's do it, man.
Story number two: could we see a new Switch model arrive early next year? This is Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Nintendo will launch a new Switch model hardware early next year, a report citing manufacturing sources has claimed. Taipei-based newspaper Economic Daily News claimed on Tuesday that the new Switch would enter production later this year with a launch planned for Q1 2021. According to the publication, the new Switch model will feature upgraded interactivity and improved display quality. The report cites various hardware manufacturers responsible for the Switch's flash storage, Joy-Con controllers, and more. Over the past year, several media reports have claimed that Nintendo has been planning a third Switch model in addition to the flagship console and the Switch Lite. Citing sources from a related supply chain, Taiwanese website DigiTimes reported in January that new Switch hardware would enter mass production in the first quarter of this year and launch soon after. The Wall Street Journal also claimed in 2019 that Nintendo was planning a more powerful Nintendo Switch hardware revision with enhanced features targeted at avid gamers. And in April, a Nintendo Switch firmware update reportedly referenced a new unannounced hardware model. Tim, where are you at in this whole discussion of when can we expect the Switch Pro or the Switch upgrade or whatever we're calling it at this point?
More so than any other game company, Nintendo clearly was hit hard with their plans when it comes to COVID in this year. So I don't know. Anything that they had planned is clearly changed. There's no way that I want to believe or can believe that the way that they've rolled out their games this year, where Animal Crossing was their giant game in March, and then we got Xenoblade, which sold super well, probably a lot of that due to the fact that there's nothing else coming out, and then Paper Mario, and now just kind of quiet until Pikmin. What is going to come after that? There's the rumors of a Nintendo Direct coming next week. We'll see. Whatever that ends up being. Or rumors of a Nintendo announcement coming next week. Direct's probably not the right word. When it comes to
those rumors, man, I feel like at this point, there has always been a rumor about a Nintendo Direct coming next week, no matter what week it's been.
Totally. And it might happen because right now Nintendo seems to not even have their shit together enough to... Even they don't even know, I don't think. Like, I think that certain people know, but I don't think that as a unified front between Nintendo of America and Nintendo of Japan that they understand where everything's at right now. I have often thought that the Switch Pro or whatever it's going to be called was going to be alongside Breath of the Wild 2. I think that makes a lot of sense for the audience that is going to be interested in either of those things. I think that that's a very tempting model for people that want that hardcore experience, that want Breath of the Wild 2 and are like, you know what? I already have a Switch, but I'm going to upgrade because I want the better experience for one of my favorite games of all time, sequel, you know? They'd be silly not to have that out. So I don't expect to see Breath of the Wild 2 until there's a Switch Pro system or whatever it is. And I do think that Breath of the Wild 2 is closer than a lot of people expect. Is all of that thrown into a loop? I don't fucking know. But I truly believe that Breath of the Wild 2 was planned to be this year.
Do you think it's possible we see a new Switch model and Breath of the Wild 2 in Q1 2021?
I do think it's possible. I don't think it's likely at this point. With Pikmin 3 being in October, I think it is. It might be September. Either way, that's pretty clear to me that that game was supposed to come out sometime this summer. And they were going to have something bigger then, and everything just got pushed back. But I don't know. Hype, like, theorizing about Nintendo at this point is kind of just going in circles of talk, because we just don't know. We don't have enough information to go off. All we know is that they're being really, really weird. So anything can happen.
Story number three, Microsoft has backed Epic in their battle against Apple. This is from Tucker Higgins at CNBC, which I don't think we've cited CNBC on this show before. And so this is some big business news that we're dealing with here. Microsoft has stepped into the brewing legal battle between Apple and Epic Games over the former's policies with regard to its ubiquitous app store. In a declaration filed on Sunday, a senior Microsoft engineer said that allowing Apple to block Epic Games' developer account would deal a significant blow to game makers, including Microsoft, by making them unable to use Epic's Unreal Engine. Quote, "If Unreal Engine cannot support games for iOS or macOS, Microsoft will be required to choose between abandoning its customers and potential customers on the iOS and macOS platforms, or choosing a different game engine when preparing to develop new games. Apple's discontinuation of Epic's ability to develop and support Unreal Engine for iOS and macOS will harm game creators and gamers," end quote. A hearing on Epic's motion is scheduled for Monday afternoon. Tim, a new challenger has approached. Do you think Microsoft backing Epic is going to have a big impact on this Epic v. Apple situation?
I think it's a big move, and I think that it's a strong motion to be like, I stand in solidarity with this, especially because, you know, Epic is making the move for themselves, of course, but they are also making the move for the industry, and it specifically seems to be in response to xCloud not being able to be on iOS. So with all of that, like, I think that these are important steps that need to happen. And there's so much that can be discussed about who's right, who's wrong, what should happen, all that. But at the end of the day, as a gamer, from what I'm looking for and what I think that millions of us are looking for, it is convenience. I keep saying this, I'm a broken record. Next gen, it needs to be about convenience of, if something should work, it should work. Like, if you think something should be able to work a certain way, that's how it probably should be. And I'm not going crazy with that of like, oh, you should be able to play Nintendo games on a PlayStation. You get what I'm saying. And I think that when it comes to xCloud, it should work on iOS. We all agree with that. We understand that this is a service that we are used to our phones working a certain way, where apps are part of our lives and apps can do so many different things. And it's weird when an app can't do something. Specifically something that we know it can do on Android.
Yeah.
So I think this is super important. I think that Microsoft siding with Epic is great. I'd love to see more people come forth and like more big names do this as well. But we'll have to see.
To your point, right? As consumers, we know when we're being fed bullshit. And like, I think that's the biggest part of it when it comes to the xCloud involvement. Because when this Epic versus Apple thing first started, right, when me and Greg read that first news story, that was, Epic is sidestepping around the Apple Store, right, in order to allow people to buy V-Bucks through their own proprietary means. When that got revealed, that's where my mind first went, and that was our first reference, right, because this came on the heels of xCloud being blocked from Apple for all intents and purposes. And that seemed like a very arbitrary decision, a decision that's based plainly off of competition, right? Apple wants to be able to sell you their games. They don't want xCloud on their store because they know how big of competition that would be. And the reasoning being bullshit that we're all able to kind of see, right? Because the reasoning was, oh yeah, we don't want unvetted software on our system because xCloud would then allow you to have access to all these different games, and we want to be able to protect our consumer base. That that kind of gets thrown out the window when you look at all the other apps that are available on the App Store, right? That kind of gets thrown out the window when you have apps like Amazon, or you have plenty of other apps that do allow you to have access to all these different kinds of services, whether it is like games or whatever it may be, through their own apps, right? This is specifically an Apple versus Microsoft beef. And so to see Epic on the heels of that jump in, be like, hey, some of Apple's policies are kind of bullshit and kind of lending to the monopolization, you know, of their system and of that store and of that ecosystem. To see them step in, you know, that's awesome on the heels of the Microsoft stuff. And then to see Microsoft after that then back Epic, that is even more awesome. Like, I went through and read the whole declaration that came from Microsoft, and they make a lot of good points there, right? Their whole point is, yeah, if Apple blocks Unreal Engine, then that kind of fucks with not only us, but with the games industry in general. Like, in that declaration, they reference indie games, they reference a bunch of different developers who use the Unreal Engine, because the Unreal Engine is one of the most popular video game engines available. And, you know, I'm so curious on what the thought process is on the Apple side to block Unreal Engine, because they have to know, to some extent, they must know how popular and how important that engine is to the games on their service. And so to block it, it seems counterintuitive on the Apple side, but it's nice to see Microsoft take a stand.
Totally. And I mean, I think that the reason Apple's doing this is a nice combination of ego and trying to protect their business and protect the money that they make. And it's them looking at their side and just being like, it's the if you give a mouse a cookie type thing, where they're just like, why would we change this when it's working for us right now? Like, and yeah, we don't want to be bullied into having to change things, because where does that line end, right? And luckily, we don't need to fight that fight. That is something they need to figure out. And like I said earlier, like, I know where I stand on this, and it's not with Epic, but it is for the convenience of being able to play games. So
yeah, exactly. Like, I don't necessarily, like, I'm not necessarily 100% on the side of Epic, but at the same time, I do hope they win, right? Like, mm-hmm. I do hope they win this fight, because as much as it is a business move for them to want to make more money off the store and have more freedom and do all that stuff as their own business, if they win, that is a win for the industry, because that then breaks down barriers that Apple does have in place. And yeah, to the whole Apple shutting down Epic thing, right? It is a chess game, and that, like, it very much feels like the equivalent of Apple moving their pawn in a place to where their queen is exposed, but like, that it also gives me the advantage at the same time, because if you take their queen, it's checkmate for you. Like, it's totally, they're in that place, and it's fascinating to see this play out. Story number four.
Wait longer.
Well, we'll see results of this soon. Story number four, and this is one that I'm gonna say take with the largest grain of salt, because this is one of the ones where it's like, this is a rumor coming from a person from Reset Era who seems to have credence, but at the same time, like, who knows? Could Halo Infinite drop its Xbox One version? This is from Sheriff Saeed at VG247. Nothing is seemingly off the table for 343 Industries when it comes to Halo Infinite. Since the Halo Infinite delay, theories and reports about what went wrong at 343 Industries during development have been dropping left and right. Some suggested the game's development was heavily outsourced, making it harder for a united vision to coalesce. Others, such as Reset Era forum member Spunger, are more concerned with what 343 might do next now that it bought itself more time. According to Spunger, the team is currently looking into possibly making the game a next-gen/PC exclusive, dropping support for Xbox One entirely. Having to make a version of Infinite for a console that's over 7 years old, particularly given Infinite's technical ambitions, is proving difficult. According to them, the current build on Xbox One is having trouble loading in assets in the game's open world, seemingly even more than the PC demo we saw, which had all sorts of pop-in. Either modifying the game engine further to make Infinite somehow work well on Xbox One, or potentially dropping it in favor of focusing on Xbox Series X and PC won't be a simple task, and the same user suggests a further delay to 2022 is not unlikely. Though no one has yet to verify Spunger's specific claims, a Reset Era moderator has said that they believe the user to be, quote, in a position to possibly know such things, end quote. It goes without saying that you should take this with a pinch of salt. And I'm going to say, as me, Blessing Adoya, take this with the biggest grain of salt, right? Like, this is coming from the source.
This is bullshit. It's not real. I do think that there's a future that this could become real. I don't think that it's real now, and I don't think that this is at all a plan that they're even considering. I think that if a delay were to happen to 2022, at that point, I wouldn't be surprised if it was next-gen exclusive. We're so far from that being the case that that's a different conversation entirely. I think that this is the type of fanboy speculation that that starts up when these console wars are beginning to heat up again. We just see these like stories that kind of just feel like hits against, you know, like the, like made up stuff to make the other side sound bad. And the fact that there even needs to be another side is just ridiculous. But my boy Titus on Twitter recently was tweeting, and in response to this, and he's like, oh, well, expect an outlandish negative PS5 rumor soon. And it's like, that totally is what this feels like. In the same way that, guess what, guys? There's a Nintendo Direct every day. Like, there's going to be a rumor about a Nintendo Direct forever until one happens. And then the moment it happens, there's going to be rumors for the next one. It's the same thing right now with PS5 and Xbox Series X. There's going to be a lot of shit being thrown. So much of it not true, not backed up at all. And I bet this isn't real.
Yeah, I'm with you in terms of I don't necessarily believe it. I'm kind of waiting on whatever the Jason Schreier report is on Halo Infinite's development to like know the truth behind everything going on there, because I think there like I think there are obviously behind the scenes stuff that are causing the game to be delayed, like any game that is delayed. But yeah, this seems almost like a like say this was true, right? This seems so counterintuitive to what the central vision of Xbox is, right? And I mean, at this point, the game is coming out this fall. You're telling me you made it this far into having the game developed on the Xbox One, and you're just going to abandon that version? That seems kind of far-fetched to me. That said, enough people tagged me in this on Twitter, and then I saw VG247 and VGC reporting on it, so I was like, I guess I'll include it for that. But
oh, I think it's important to talk about.
Yeah,
I think it needed to be in here. Good job,
Tim. Before I get to story number 5, I want to let people know that, of course, they can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where they can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by NZXT. Tim, tell me about NZXT.
NZXT Build, BLD, is awesome. It's a computer company. They make computers for you, two specs to the type of game you want to play. You just go to the website, then you choose the game, whether it's Fortnite, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, anything in between, Red Dead Redemption 2, you click on it, and then it recommends you a build for your computer. And then they build it for you in some of the most beautiful cases I have ever seen. And they do all the cable management, and they just make it look scrumptious. I know, because recently they built computers for me and Andy, and we are both absolutely in love with them. It matches the aesthetic of my room perfectly, where it is just, it's all white. I got the 710 series. Oh my God, the case is beautiful, and the inside, so many LEDs, so pink, so blue, so fantastic. NZXT Build is the simplest way to get a gaming PC customized the way that you want. The recommendation engine matches the games you love with the performance you need to run them without compromise. You simply choose the type of games you want to play, you set a budget, and then they take care of the rest. Snowbike Mike recently got an NZXT from this build program as well. He's loving his. It's a fantastic thing they got going on here. All these PCs are backed by a 2-year warranty and an FPS guarantee for peace of mind on reliability and performance. You can learn more at www.letsbld.com for a limited time. You can use code KFG for a free NZXT puck with purchase on an NZXT pre-built system like the NZXT Streamer PC or H1 Mini PC. NZXT puck must be added to your cart before purchase for the discount to apply. Once again, NZXT Build is the simplest way to get a gaming PC customized the way you want. Learn more at nzxt.co/kindoffunny. YT.
We're also brought to you by Klarna. Thanks to Klarna for supporting Kind of Funny Games Daily in Sweden. They don't shop, they Klarna. Klarna is a revolutionary new online shopping app from Sweden that allows you to shop thousands of online stores and pay for anything in 4 easy, interest-free payments that make shopping smoother. With the Klarna app, you can shop anywhere online from the one app. It's easy to use and convenient to browse thousands of online stores all from one convenient place. Pay for anything in 4 interest-free payments. Paying after delivery allows you to try before you buy, and you can also report returns directly in the app. Get the best deals with customized price drop alerts on items you save to your wish list. It's always good to shop smarter and save money. Create and share wish lists of items with friends and family anywhere online. It's a fun, easy way to show what kind of products you like. Tim loves how easy it is to find what you're looking for and get set up. Klarna is a smoother, friendlier, Swedisher way to shop online. It's the one-stop shopping app for browsing and buying anything online. All-in-one app and allows you to pay for anything in 4 easy, interest-free payments. Download the Klarna app today. That's K-L-A-R-N-A, Swedish for shopping. We're also brought to you by Bespoke Post. As y'all settle into this new normal version of summer, Bespoke Post is here with customized box of awesome collections for guys, guaranteed to upgrade your life. Right now, more than ever, you got to make sure to treat yourself, and the assortment of boxes available from Bespoke will help you do just that. They got boxes featuring nice bags, wallets, kitchenware, and more. I scrolled through their website earlier, and I was blown away by the amount of varied items I wanted to get my hands on. Bespoke Post only sends guys the best stuff every month. No matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. From style and grooming goods to barware, cooking tools, and outdoor gear, Box of Awesome has carefully built collections for every part of your life. One of the boxes, called Laced, comes with a comfy pair of suede shoes that look super stylish. I plan to wear mine every day once they get delivered.
Hell yeah. There's even a Hue pack. Hue lighting pack.
Oh yeah, there is a Hue lighting pack that I also had my eyes on too, and I was like, oh man, I had to make the decision. I was like, do I want to get Laced or do I want to get Hue? I went with Laced because I need some new shoes, but Hue also looks hot. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs only $45, but has over $70 worth of gear inside. Get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter code GAMES at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code GAMES for 20% off your first box. Tim,
yes.
Back to the show. I got a couple of quick hits for you. Okay. Story number 5, there's a new Fall Guys patch. This is from Jonathan Bolding at PC Gamer. The Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout development team has dropped a preview of what's coming in the next patch, which will hopefully release in the next week. The biggest fix is probably going to be the changes that should address the top 5 most frequent crashes for the game. More changes include party members are now sorted first in spectator mode, PS4 added controller options, including invert, Y, and X axis, which is probably the actual biggest change, because I know Nick Scarpino really wanted that, and a few of my friends were really looking forward to inverting the Y axis. Slime climb, players can no longer grab some of the moving obstacles, and there's a whole bunch more. Go over to Fall Guys Twitter if you want the full breakdown of that. And then our last story, story number 6, Summer Games Done Quick was a success. This is from Marie De Alessandri at gamesindustry.biz. Summer Games Done Quick 2020 online came to an end yesterday, raising a total of $2.3 million for Doctors Without Borders. SGDQ was fully digital this year due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic and started on August 16th. The broadcast of the event on Twitch reached 107,500 concurrent viewers at its peak. So congratulations to SGDQ. I'm always excited when that's going on, but I always fail to tune in because I'm a terrible viewer. But it's always exciting to see the clips, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Highly recommend people go check that out on YouTube if you're able to. Of course, SGDQ for next year, or I guess Awesome Games Done Quick would be the next one. That is so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, Tim, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Whoa, I was not expecting that. Is that the Tim Getty jingle?
Yes, it is.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you for that, Kevin. Out today, we got Operation Zeta for PC, Water Rain for PC, Mary Park Street for PC, Orbit of Death for PC, and then Flower Challenge for PC. New dates, Yakuza Like a Dragon is coming to Xbox One, Windows 10, PS4, and Steam on November 13th. And then the Xbox Series X version is coming in November, and the PS5 version is coming soon. Usually this is where I'd get into reader mail, but we're running late for this show, and so I'm going to read some of the mail in the post show. But we do have time 4, a squad up. Jordan Vickers writes in with a squad up on PS4 and says, I'm looking for people to play Mean Green's Plastic Warfare with on PS4. For reference, this is the Plastic Green Army Men game that's only online multiplayer. I'm not much of a trophy hunter, but I am singling in on my 11th platinum. I just need more best friends because playing against bots suck. If you want to play with Jordan Vickers, you can add them on PS4 with the username Joker Vic. That is JOKERVICK, all one word. And I had a couple of squad ups to choose from. I chose this one specifically for the Mean Greens because that's one that I played for PSLW. And let me tell you, man, that game kind of sucks. And the fact that you're going for the platinum in it, I highly respect because that is some dedication. I can't imagine how much frustration you're going through to get that platinum. Because when I played it on launch day of that game, and there were only 3 other players in my lobby, and the rest was filled with bots. And so that means, Joker Vic, you're playing with a lot of bots, and those bots were not fun to play against, and I highly respect you for that decision. Go get them. And if you have the Mean Greens, or you want to play the Mean Greens with Jordan Vickers, go ahead and add them. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you write in and let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong.
What did we get wrong today? What did we get wrong today? That didn't work as I wanted it to.
People are telling me about
what you were trying to do, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I should acknowledge this. The new Fall Guys patch is actually out today. It's currently live. Thank you to the Nanobiologist and Captain Mark for that. And one more, again from Nanobiologist. The Summer Game Fest Twitter confirmed that World of Warcraft Shadowlands would make an appearance during opening night live. And there you go for that. I'm skimming through to make sure we didn't miss anything else. And that looks like it. So we killed it, Tim. Me and you, mm-hmm. We killed it on this
10 out of 10, man. Tim and Blast.
10 out of 10. Only spin facts.
Deal with it, motherfucker.
This week's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily are tomorrow, it's me and Andrew Renee. Wednesday, Tim and Gary Witta. Thursday, Blessing and Imran. That's me and Imran. And then Friday, again, it's me and Imran. Of course, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.